You're listening to Radio Free Cybertron with your hosts, Brian Kilby, J.D. Church, Ender, Rob Springer, John DeLuna, and XV.
Yeah, this is Radio Free Cybertron, the original Transformers internet radio show. We're kind of awesome. I'm Brian Kilby. With me, I have the usual crew, JD, Ender, John, and Rob. Anybody else? We're short XV. XV is not here. I thought XV was going to be on. That little jerk.
He's got better stuff to do again.
Yeah, actually, probably. Right. He's probably playing WoW.
I thought he said he was sick. I don't know.
Actually, he may be sick. I don't know. I don't talk to XV much since I started my new job. He's so very lonely, too.
Oh.
It's true.
So anybody out there, XV
needs time for this. Friend.
Yeah. What, John?
Well, XV needs a chat buddy. Maybe some of our listeners can harass
him. If you want to be XV's friend, please email Brian at tfradio.net.
Don't email him.
And I will be the matchmaker.
His home phone number is...
Matchmaker.
I've got a cell number, but I'm not going to give it out unless he really pisses me off. So
you're just going to hold your hand over the button, the big red button.
I wish I had a big red button.
Yeah, you seem like the type that might someday.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. We got.
I have one right here. No.
So XV's not on the show, but he did write like the whole show for us, so I can like pretend that I'm like really caught up on what's going on. Lots of news. We have a release date for War for Cybertron, June 23rd, 2010. Cool.
Yay.
That's BotCon week.
Player stuff. Is it really? Oh, it is.
Just, yeah, wow.
Coincidence?
Spanish.
Yeah, it probably is a coincidence.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm glad I'm
trying to be all awesome.
I mean, why would you try to like disenfranchise like the core people who are going to play your game? It's like, well, do I want to go to the really big geek convention, or do I want to sit home on my butt and finish this game? Huh.
Well, I mean, they could do some big launch party or something at BotCon.
They may.
Yeah.
Maybe not big, but a bigger booth than usual.
Probably bring some like the old Transformers 2007 movie props, like the big Optimus Prime who's squatting down taking a dump.
God.
Everybody remembers that. We've all seen that except for JD. Yeah. JD's never seen that.
I don't think so. Yeah. Well, you know, because I suck.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, at least you can get some DS versions for the road trip to BotCon.
That is true. Right. That is true.
There you go.
Yeah, he's got multiplayer. Yeah, got some multiplayer. Instant panel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was some question is... that will I get it for the PS2 or the Xbox? And I gotta admit, looking at the big little montage of packages and that image they put out, I really just want to get all of them.
Huh. They want you to.
I've only done that once.
Another thing is they could sell them at BotCon.
Damn it.
Special edition and normal retail package.
Yep.
And why don't you go ahead and pre-order it from every store, too. Get all those exclusive characters.
Yeah.
There we go. That's a fantastic idea to get both. I can pre-order one from one store with some exclusive crappy content, and I can pre-order the other from another store with exclusive crappy content.
Now you're starting to think like the general public. Excellent.
Damn it.
The masses.
I'm so confused that Shockwave is an exclusive character because it's like, oh, hey, isn't he one of the core characters anyway?
No.
Does that seem like an afterthought to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's a strong B-team.
Yeah, he's definitely B-team.
Yeah, but he's up there.
He didn't
I just figured if on Cybertron he'd be an automatic. Maybe we should have that guy that's always on the planet anyway.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean,
that's fair.
In the comic, he was in the cartoon. He was like, you know, always on Cybertron. He was Megatron's bitch. In the comic, he didn't show up till the end of issue 4. So who cares?
Imagine that there should have been like a whole cut conversation in there when Shockwave's like, "All right, we're going to Earth," and not you, bitch. Yeah. You stay.
Oh,
okay. That's right, XC. Shockwave is the janitor.
He was a pretty lousy janitor. He was the janitor.
No, there's like nothing to do. Like everybody was gone
on the space bridge and be like, "Dude, you didn't clean the bathroom, like anything. You couldn't do the dishes. Been gone 4 million years, man."
Did you guys see that Dr. Smoove video where it's like Shockwave sitting up in space lonely and just talking to the drones. And that's the day I beat Pong. Oh, Megatron's calling. Megatron's calling. Oh, hi, Megatron. It's me.
No, I didn't.
I just want to imagine what you'd do for like 4 million years with a planet full of nothing.
Oh.
Masturbate, I guess.
I guess. There's got to be a lot of FAP in there, because that's just...
So with Shockwave, he wouldn't have any logic in that. He'd probably just be like, I guess I should repartition the hard drives again.
Just rearrange furniture.
That was one of the things Dreamwave really had right, was they came back, and from that, and Shockwave, like, ruled the planet with an iron fist. And it was like, of course I'm in charge.
Only one. Only one.
Let me, you're alone. Yeah. The one fist.
Let's make it do.
Only one iron fist, and that's all I need. Everyone with a gun. Want to shake hands with death? Huh?
I do like that they're doing a hidden character that's from Armada. I'll give them that. You know what I'm saying? Demolisher.
That, oh, really?
Yeah. I was so happy.
Yeah. Well, they don't do... I mean, like, that's just a toy line that is probably not going to get a heck of a lot of homages. You know what I mean?
It's a shame.
Nobody's going to, like, hearken back to Armada. Other than, like, for mini-cons.
Contribution is going to be Hotshot.
No, kids, the age of the fish. We really need to get the fish on to discuss this.
Yeah, where's the fish?
We need to
bring
get
on the fish generation.
Well, we Twittered it, so he'll probably be on in a minute.
Yeah, we need to... Actually, I think we're going to start bringing the fish on every week, or every other week, and just talk to him for a couple minutes. Because the fish is kind of like the new mascot of RSC. He's kind of like the Jimmy Olsen.
Yes, exactly.
What exactly does that say about the show?
I don't know.
You're listening to Billy and the Fish.
He's like the Cub podcaster here at RFC.
That's great. Is that a gay reference, or what is that?
No,
I don't...
No. He's no bear. That'll be bear. Bear. Hey,
bear.
Yeah. Okay. Hello, chat room. I see quite a few people in there.
Hello, all those people listening and the weird directions that I'm like this.
XV is actually in there, but he's not on the show. That's really odd.
Wow.
I'm telling what a jerk.
I would be in there chatting with you, but I can't get the thing to work. I'm lame.
Oh, yeah. I should log on here.
So,
what else in the news?
Anyway, game. No, but there was the video stuff of the game, and I didn't want to mention. So am I understanding this correct? It's going to be like the multiplayer co-op. Is this going to be like that Star Wars Commandos game now?
Oh, that would be awesome. Is that what it's going to be like?
Sadly, I don't think so.
It's not going to... okay. Well, actually,
kind of like that. I got the impression it was more like a squad-based thing.
Right, which like is it. What that was. That's what that Star Wars Commandos was.
When I think squad...
Well, Commandos, I'm sorry. I'm thinking you meant Battlefront. No, Commandos,
I was thinking Battlefront.
I think he was saying Battlefront.
I never played Commandos. What is that like? It's like Rainbow Six or something?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, you have AI control, so you can play, I think, as any of the individual class types, you know, whether it's the medic or the squad leader or the demolitions or whatever, and then you go through the missions. But a lot of those games, it really comes down to how good is the AI, because you're really kind of at the mercy of either can you micromanage your team enough to get through whatever it is you're trying to get through, and or is the rest of the game so stupid that it doesn't matter how bad the AI is. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I'm just saying
I can run over everybody for 7 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily good or bad. It just means it's going to come down a lot more to how well it's programmed. Because if it's what? And the feed? Sorry,
life is dead.
Life feed's dead. The system is down. The system is down. The system is down. Do-do-do-do. I'm sorry. I went down.
That's pretty bad.
I accidentally clicked the button, I think.
Sorry, I went to strong back. The system is down.
So,
okay, anyway.
Oh.
Sorry.
So, JD, are you recording by chance?
Am I recording? No, God, no.
I gave you the tools. You need to execute.
Why would I do that?
You didn't teach him.
I'm not reinforced to do that.
Okay, well, you need to start doing it.
Okay, so that's where we are. Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna go ahead. Now I already have Skype running. I have to start the other thing.
Ah, no, never mind. I'm gonna hope that this doesn't fail. If
anyone
doesn't,
recording?
Maybe this is like a one-time only RFC. This will
It'd be like the other one, the long-lost RFC that you did back
long
in
long-lost RFC
back in 2001.
The CHS episode that's lost. Hello.
Go ahead. Now you're speaking, JD. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that. Yeah, that it's really sad that the lost episode is gone because there's a great clip of Tim, Heath, and I doing like a very poor advertisement in a A-team style intro. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, sad. I missed that.
Yeah, it's really.
You're too busy living.
Yeah, it was something else. It was back when we had more time than we knew what to do with.
Yeah, that's the reason I started this thing back in 1999. I didn't have anything to do.
I'm so bored.
Hey, listeners out there in the chat room. Yeah, it is the thrill of live internet radio, Rob. Hey, how's my volume? Is it better this week? Because I think I figured out why it sucked before. Besides being me.
Yeah, I'll tell you why it sucked before.
Fantastic. I was paying in pounds.
Kristen says it's
slow. Looking blue now.
Kristen says it's slow.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll live. DevCon says it's good. So.
Yeah. If DevCon says it's good.
I trust Dev. Hey, let's see here. What else were we discussing?
I was talking about the game.
Yes.
But I don't know where that got lost. But anyway, the point being, if it's a team based, it's going to come down to how good the AI is. And that's on both sides. It has to compensate. Either the AI for the players has to be good, so that the other people that you're running with, the healing, the medic, the demolitions, whatever, is doing what they're supposed to do, or the game mechanics have to be the game AIs have to be so dumbed down that it doesn't matter how smart the other players are.
Do you not think that it's possible? And this is not a gaming podcast, and I don't want to go too deep into this. But do you think that it's not possible that the gameplay itself could be so engaging that it could overcome bad AI? I mean, that happens. I mean, most games have really crappy AI, but you overlook it.
I think what's going to happen is that this is the age of the casual gamers, they like to call themselves, and that there's just going to be a setting that's going to be, you can either just muscle through this game and enjoy it, or we can crank up the difficulty so you actually have to pay attention to your stats. Right.
Halo's easy as can be if you play it on the first, first two levels, but if you play it like at the highest, it's hard.
It's still pretty easy. Suddenly you're playing like Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, exactly. What, Rob? Did we lose Rob?
Okay. Rob?
We lost Rob. Okay.
Oh my god.
That was good.
It's a disappearing act. It's magic.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so,
I've got all these songs in my head today, I'm sorry. I don't mean to sing.
Please don't. Okay, Johnny Young Bosch, voicing Bumblebee in Transformers Prime, I take it.
Who?
Oh, yeah, he was the Black Ranger for a while.
Whoop these shit.
Oh, wow, really?
Which one? Was there only one Black Ranger?
No, he was the second Black Ranger. After the one guy and the other guy and the other girl left.
Wait, what? That
XV,
make
is,
three?
XV is like having a connection right now.
Is XV screaming at me right now? Please say he is. Okay. Yeah. Okay, there he is. Okay. No, I mean, right, because there was the original three Rangers, and then they left for whatever reason, like third season or something. Oh, it's Hooks. Oh, never mind. Anyway. So, no? I don't know.
Huh?
Anyway.
What?
Did I say it Hooks? It's not Hooks.
You're on a roll. Keep going.
Anyway, people that are listening to this later have no idea what I'm talking about. Anyway, so
that's the Magic Line Radio.
Left,
I don't know what you're talking about now.
He's talking about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and the Black
that
Ranger.
That takes talent.
I'm trying to talk about Mighty Morphin
Power
Rangers.
Are we talking about? When we say Black Ranger, are we talking about the black colored costume or race?
Yes, the black colored costume.
Yes.
It was a point of horrible irony that the Black Ranger was also that the original Black Ranger was also black.
That wasn't irony. The Asian one was yellow. The pink one was a girl.
Yes. Okay. Well. Okay. Both of those castings are
irony, but that was not it. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's right. The original red, yellow, and black got into.
About, yeah.
I can't
get
to the story.
Power Rangers was racist.
Yes. In case you were wondering,
I don't think it was racist. It just wasn't as deep as the Deep Blue Sea.
Right. It was a little, yeah, it was a little basic. But anyway, first, I can't remember why it happened to the series. They went to, I don't know, they got to a, like a foreign exchange student thing or something. I can't remember. It was in the show. But anyway, those three characters left, and then they had three new bimbos come in, and new red, new yellow, new black, and this was the guy that was playing the new Black Ranger. I think it was for the third season.
Man, but, I am enjoying your scholarly description of Power Rangers here.
I should. What's bad? Yeah, I'm hoping I'm not like pitching myself for being on.
get ready for hate mail.
Hero time. I know. I'm gonna get a ton of hate mail from the people that actually listen to Superhero Time. Yeah. It's like, you're an idiot. You have no idea what you're talking about.
I think Superhero Time has the most rabid fandom of all our podcasts. I mean, I have the largest fandom of all our podcasts, but it has the most
rabid. All four of them, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I haven't gotten any hate mail, though, so maybe I ought to – oh, God, no, I don't think so. XV saying I'm this new backup. Heck no.
You're doing a good job of it.
Apparently.
You are. Getting hate mail if I don't get hate mail.
It's a little known fact that I watched a lot of Power Rangers when I was in like high school. But anyway,
man.
So anyway, so this is the guy, and he's doing Bumblebee. So there you go. It's a little tie-in.
Long story.
Just to say that it's the guy that's done nothing for like 8 years.
Hey, he makes a great sandwich.
Right? Yeah. I was up for doing Bumblebee in this game. All right.
He makes a great – what did you say, Rod? He makes a great sandwich.
Yes, because the other day I was at Arby's. I was like, dude, I'll have a beef and Swiss. And he just threw it together.
Yeah. Some ninja moves.
Yeah, I'm certain he's not been doing anything in the last 8 years. You know,
what do the Power Rangers do when they're off the season?
So, I mean, we have two people who have been professional actors on the show. We have Rob and JD. So you guys haven't always, like, acted professionally. I mean – You found other jobs, be it working at Arby's or whatever.
Yeah.
Very few people that aren't like people you see on stage or television are professional actors. You have people that are like wait staff and then act, but you know. So.
Or if you go to like Branson, Missouri, they're both.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
It's a good thing Amanda's not listening to this. She would be.
Good.
But But, you know, but hey,
can I take my order now?
What?
Hey, you were Zordon.
Yeah. Hey, aren't you that guy that was in Power Rangers? By the way, my tea is almost empty.
Would you like fries with that?
It sounds so familiar. And it was, yeah. He's in a video game? I don't know.
Dude, I was floating heads the drive through and like, this little floating head came out and took my order.
That'd be pretty awesome.
That's gotta suck too. Like if you actually had like a role and then you go back to like doing nothing.
That's gotta suck because he's carrying your food in his mouth.
You know,
like, where else is he gonna put that tray?
And I want ketchup. You big floating head.
Yeah. Is he Asian? I don't know if he's Asian.
I don't know.
I thought he was.
It's like some sort of amalgamation face, like the first version of the Emperor from The Empire Strikes Back, when it was like part old lady and part orangutan.
Yes.
Man, if only it was that, actually.
And the voice of Kickback.
Imagine they tried to replicate that for the prequels. Like, holy God!
Yeah. Oh, man. They would have been 100 times better.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of, we'll talk about that. I want to talk about that that link that you gave me, John, that red letter reviews. Oh, my God. Anyway.
Oh, yes.
You haven't gone to that website. Go to redletterreviews.com.
Is this a porn site or something?
No, but it's almost as awesome.
It is for geeks in a way.
Oh, cool. I'll check it out.
Snarky.
But you know, but porn is porn for geeks, too. Actually, porn is also sex for geeks, so.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, we're going all kinds of places today. I don't know what we're doing.
Live.
Or hate mail. I could say something funny and personally revealing about that, but I'm not going to.
Thank you.
Yes. So,
you may just have.
The Wii version of War for Cybertron to be called Transformers Cybertron Adventures and supposedly to make it more family friendly. Okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to delineate it from the rest of the brand because it's going to suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So So, one person's war is another person's adventure, is what they're saying.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, if you don't get shot in the leg,
one person's war is another person's shelf warmer.
Mm. Mm.
Honestly, that's the one I'm going to look at first before the 360.
Really?
Well, I'm a sucker for the motion controls and using my remote like a mouse.
It's going to have been developed by a different company and have nothing to do with the actual.
Then it's an actual game, and that's great. That's a separate game. Fantastic.
It's a completely separate game.
That's great to know.
It'll be as separate as the handhelds, if not more.
Don't care.
That just gives you two games to play.
I'm not talking straight.
At the same time.
I mean, I'll probably end up with the 360 version later when it goes down to like 20, but yeah, like using the remote like a mouse, you know, that's fun to me.
You can use the thumb pad like a mouse on the 360.
Yeah, but I can't go aim it around and look like I'm really doing something in my room. I've just seen the commercials. It's exciting.
I like to use my mouse like a mouse.
Yeah. I tend to use a mouse as a mouse. I have a nice laser mouse, and it works well.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Animated premiered in Japan with most cliche anime-style opening possible. Whoa, I liked it. That. I'll be honest with you.
It was crazy fun.
I like the intro.
I loved it because it's so cliche. Every frame is a cliche.
The only crazy part is, okay, Bulkhead's Ironhide in there, so who's the red guy? Exoport, come on, come over here.
Yeah. So
actually, his name is Exoport.
Is it?
Is it really?
It should.
Now. Okay.
I just named him.
Just go with it. Go with it.
So,
it
but
is.
The intro, it looked pretty. It was, you know, it was only, it, you know, there were a couple of anime cliches missing. I mean, there was like a little power up scene because Optimus powered up in it.
You know. Is there somebody making an anime, like, lovey face with the puppy dog eyes and stuff like that?
Megatron.
No, sir. No blushing robots.
No butt cleavage.
No.
Cute girl butt cleavage. I'm not a big anime fan, but I know a few anime cliches.
Who's the guy in the cape at the middle? I mean, at the beginning of it, who's like, Omninus, whoa, Decepticon Lord. Is it Megatron or Violent Jiger?
It could have been Violent Jiger.
Good question.
Man, I hope it was, because if he's in the continuity, awesome.
They should sneak Diatlas in.
Well, Grandis is already there, so might as well.
Yeah. Okay.
What does Prime power up into? Shiny?
No, he does the, like, the battle mode when he puts on his... Actually, instead of the mouth plate coming up from the bottom, it actually comes in from the sides and meets... I never saw it do that in the cartoon at all.
No, that's pretty stylized.
Yeah, so that's, like, completely new. I mean, not like it matters.
I'm so happy the show is in Japan just because it means that if Hasbro weeks out and doesn't give us all those awesome animated toys they designed, Takara will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
How many are left? As much for them.
Blackout, Rodimus, who else?
Blackout, Rodimus, Ironhide.
That'd be most of our chance to get an Ironhide.
Was there an Ironhide prototype? I don't remember seeing it.
Yeah,
there was an Ironhide.
Hell, I want that.
There's that Prime with wings.
What's his name? Eric Sabinaller, something like that. I think his name is. That dude like has his crap together, and he was saying what they did when they made Ratchet is they just sent over an extra head mold to be made, and they like didn't tell anybody, so that when the stuff came back, they had Ironhide's head already made.
Yeah,
so they didn't have to do a remold later. It was like as if they had made Ironhide's head as an accessory.
Yeah.
I like Matty Glancer, but then not included. So,
yeah. Yes, Mike, Rodimus and Ironhide are coming out this
fall.
And you find them.
Yeah.
Those are really great looking toys. I was so thrilled to get new animated toys after a year of, you know, I've fallen and I can't get up crap.
You know, Hasbro's been pretty good about releasing crap, like, late into, like, the next product line. Like, they did it with Robots in Disguise, and they're like, hey, be exclusives. But, I mean, Hasbro will release crap, you know, quite a while after a series is over.
Well, that would be nice. There's also been a history of, you know, cool toys they didn't get around to.
Or cool toys that were released in, like, really limited runs, which really sucks.
I think the only thing that would make this intro more anime style is if it was like Sari at a carnival, like playing with a giant rhinoceros or something.
Something phallic?
Oh, God.
No, just something random. Just something that has like nothing to do with the actual series and yet is just you just go, what? No, like the Gundam Wing, like, outros,
yeah,
you know, Wing, where it's like...
Good, I know, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly,
you know what I mean? It's like...
Name. She'd be, like, sitting out on the back of a rhino or hanging out with an elephant going on safari. And
and you're like, what does that have anything to do with this series?
I'm kind of surprised they didn't show Sari's robot mode in their intro. I mean, they showed RC and Ironhide like they did something.
Yeah, exactly. It's like RC's like a regular cast member on this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah. That toy is actually pretty cool. I broke down and bought one for my daughter.
eBay?
Yeah. I didn't want an eBay one, but I did for her. I swear to God, she had a dream one night, and she woke up and was talking about it, because I had been talking about it so much.
When we were talking to her earlier, she was talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I got to get her an RC. I can't not get her an RC now. Yeah. Even if it's going to cost me $30, I got to get an RC now.
$30 now is worth, you know, tons of, like, cost of therapy later.
Oh, yeah, all those therapy bills. Let me tell you something about therapy bills in the Transformers. The other day, every Good Friday, I watch the movie, and then every Easter, I watch The Return of Optimus Prime. And I put on the movie, and she wanted to watch it with me, and she got so upset when Prime died that I was like, screw it, and I just pulled out The Return of. I was like, no, see, he's okay. And as we were watching, I'm like, geez, where the hell was this when I was six?
Oh, God, yeah.
There's that crappy TV edit where the announcer, Dick Carroll, pops in and says, like, don't worry, he'll be okay, kids.
Yeah.
Now, I never saw that. Didn't the UK cut of the movie, it has that Star Wars type intro, and it actually alludes at the end that he'll be back?
Yeah, it's the one I think Rhino put out on VHS, which... I don't know if you can still find her anymore, but yeah, it's got the Star Wars intro, and then it pretty much repeats itself live action in case you were stupid or something. And then at the end, don't worry, kids, he'll be back. You'll be fine.
Yeah, Ironhide 1975, Anthony, he has that. I have the Mallow Film Canadian version of VHS.
I have it also,
Chris Triplett, he has that version. I just never got around to watching it.
Yeah, I have the old one, too.
Oh, XV said that you should have showed her Dark Awakening.
That would have been, that solidifies.
Well, both Return of and Dark Awakening are again examples of how much I think the writers of the Transformers hated Rodimus Prime.
And besides making him a whiny,
like, you actually watch those fights, like, at the end of the Return, like, there is literally
one punch.
Optimus doesn't do anything the whole time. There is one punch. You're right. Exactly one punch from Optimus ends that fight when he breaks down and hits him. And then in the Dark Awakening, he kicks the crap out of Rodimus. Just, like, absolutely beats him to bits, and then he himself stops and gives him the Matrix anyway. Just, like, Rodimus did nothing there.
I love how he just bare-bones his chest rips open.
Oh, wasn't that, like, so violent?
Yes,
like,
he's like
the most, like, graphic depiction of death on the show. I mean, I know there was a lot in the movie, but that was like, it's like splitting the metal in his chest.
The whole scene with Optimus dying and bits of him blown away during the end piece. I remember I was like, did you see that?
I just feel like at the end of Dark Awakening, Prime's just like, I really wanted you to beat me so you'd feel better about yourself. But since you can't pull it together, here's the Matrix. Get the hell off the ship.
God.
God.
Think about
can't do anything, kid.
The funny thing about Return is there's a statue of Optimus at the beginning, and they're all kind of looking at it, and he has to kind of explain it to them who it is. It's like, you remember the guy we fought yesterday?
Why is that statue's hysterical? I always want, like, Ultra Magnus to walk up and be like, oh, Rodimus, when did you build that?
That?
Like, last night, I carved it with my own hands. I'm like, okay, Rodimus.
Who's that statue? You know the guy that led us last year? Yeah.
I just realized Go ahead.
No, you're good.
I just realized we're still in the news. So IDW releases a comic reader app for the iPad.
Lots of news.
So the comic reader app for the iPad is, like, not surprising at all, since they have one on the PSP already.
Yes.
Is your application on which you can read comics?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, on that, I was looking at it last night.
Science.
They have the current issues of the Transformers ongoing on there, right? Because they're only up to issue 4, right? Or how far along is the?
They're up to five.
Well, 5 is
pretty. That's pretty up for an online app kind of thing.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because I was looking at, like, oh, say, Marvel, and the most recent issue of something for Marvel is from 2008.
Yeah, Marvel really sucks.
So,
wow.
They're still teaching Stan Lee how to work the scanner.
The thing is, those comics are digital.
He's too busy writing comics.
Yeah. I mean, that's yeah, exactly. They're digital. They're already in a digital format. All you have to do is upload it. It's real easy. And at $2 a shot, I mean, I would so buy that over having to...
These large retailers don't want to be responsible for the death of comic shops. I hate to warn you, but comic shops are dead already.
You love your side one.
Yeah, Chris.
That's so sad. I love my local comic shop.
Yeah, but...
I love mine, too, but, you know, I also
I would
used
love
to
mine,
love
but I don't have store. One.
You know, I used to love the video rental store, you know, yeah. But,
yeah.
You know.
I wasn't so up on that place. They used to charge me late fees. That was kind of crappy.
That is true. They did do that.
Yeah.
I did that personally. I worked
me
at
too.
Blackbuster.
Me too. So did I. So,
I liked it was the great.
Comic store. Wasn't it horrible that day you realized that the entire business model was based on late fees?
Yeah, and then I quit, and I pulled up all my friends' accounts and wiped out their late charges and then left.
Wow.
Anyway.
Remember the fee for I didn't do anything like that.
Well, go ahead, Bob.
Did any of you charge the fee for rewinding?
No, I never.
No, we were pretty much into DVDs by that time.
I just remember that.
My favorite was when people would call up and be like, but I turned that in. And we're like, no, you didn't. We looked, you know, like, go look behind the box. I bet it fell behind the box. And then, like,
they
could never possibly get to. I'd have, like, seen them place it behind the box. I'm like, yeah, sure. It was there. Have a nice day. I went from there, and I worked at a Suncoast where we just sold movies, and I was, like, standing there giddy. I'm, like, with the manager. I'm, like, check this out. What's this? And I'd sell something to somebody. I'm, like, oh, and now it goes away, and it never comes back. It's great.
Yay. Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I don't have to put it back up or anything.
Or how about the scavenger hunts? Do you ever have a scavenger hunt?
Oh, God, yeah, when you had to go through and, like, oh, wow. We are totally boring our listeners, by the way. Yeah. Anyway.
No, retail nightmares work. Come on, man.
Yeah, I guess so. But, yeah. Anyway, so we were evil. So we were those people you hated. We were tape monkeys. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sweet. So, let's see here. A guy claimed this. We had this in the news. A guy claims that a custom rig made for Transformers 3 might be Megatron or Motor Master. Okay.
We have something in the news saying might be and maybe.
XV wrote it.
It's in the room.
There's not even a picture.
Thanks, XV.
Why the heck is this in here?
Dude, I put it there.
Rob, why did you put this in here?
Rob.
I thought it was worth us laughing at. I didn't know we'd actually talk about it.
I don't want to get sued again. If this is true, it's like the last thing that...
Look, I'm all for some Motor Master, if only because it might mean there'd be some dead end, but I don't feel like this is an incredibly reliable story.
Or anything. Reliable anything.
I would just be happy
with the way they handle
it. I get the impression like they don't go to, like, you know, we need a truck prop. Let's go to a custom truck store. They have, like, people who work in Hollywood who modify cars. They come on the set, they come on the studio, and they do it themselves.
Yeah, there's plenty of people in Hollywood that are way overpaid to do stuff like this.
It's funny how the rumor goes that the guy's saying, he says this lady comes to his rim store, notices his TF ring, and brings up the fact that her husband's custom shop just made this truck for the movie. It's called Megatron. Oh, it's black and purple?
Yeah.
She's like,
in
yeah,
my experience, wow. Even if you have, to my understanding, even if you have an Autobot symbol shaved into your beard, frequently people do not notice, even in contextually sensitive situations.
Yeah. Well, I've been followed and pulled over by people from stickers on my car, so there's always that one weirdo who'll just randomly, oh, I know, you like Voltron, don't you?
Yeah, I no longer broadcast, like, except for, like, my RFC bumper sticker. I have nothing at work or in my car or anything stating that I like Transformers, because I don't like those people who come up to you and want to talk, and I heard the TFormers.com podcast, the discussion on this, people who want to talk to you and they want to tell you things that are just flat out incorrect. I just can't converse with those people.
Oh, that's always fun.
Can't converse with them, I'm sorry. I'm not the most...
Do you ever run into somebody, like, when you were wearing, like, an Autobot t-shirt and they were wearing a Decepticon t-shirt and you just thought you should bust out fighting?
I just would. Yeah. I would just anticipate them to run away.
Yeah, pretty much. Because that's that's more Decepticon right there.
Yeah, it's totally Decepticon.
Well, in either direction. I'm just saying.
You know, actually, I just want to mention this: the rumor that Rob posted into the notes. It made me think of the best worst rumor thing I ever read. There was this kid who went by the screen name Prowl. I don't know if anyone, Ender wouldn't remember this. He wasn't around. But he said that he made a tuner for his television, which allowed him to pick up a foreign version of Transformers the movie, which was broadcast in Portuguese, and he lived like in New York City, that he watched, he watched Transformers in Portuguese, and
And he spoke Portuguese, right?
Yeah, no, he didn't speak Portuguese, but he just basically did it to elicit, you know, people's. He also said,
for attention.
Yeah, attention. He's an attention whore. But basically, he would always just come up with these little crazy things that he would say. He said that his parents were in an argument. This is back in about 2000, 2001. His parents were arguing. His father said something. Pissed his mother off, and his dad said, well, that's just Prime. And then he claimed that his mother started calling his father Optimus. The things you do when you're bored and have nothing to do. Yeah. See,
it's funny because he said that way back then in attention,
and I remember it ten years later.
And now you have attempted to entertain our audience with it and probably also failed.
I failed miserably.
ATP had the best rumors.
God. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm done.
All right.
Hey, JD, what's going on this week in history?
Hang on. You know, before we jump to that, I have something I want to talk about.
Oh, is this the rant?
Yeah, this is the rant. This is the rant. Okay, so, you know, every once in a while we get these little, like, ask Hasbro your burning questions thing, right? So, you know, circumventing any whatever methodology is supposed to happen for how those get asked. I asked a question, and because I'm on staff, you know, it got asked. And that question was, what precipitated the decision to cancel the Robot Heroes, even though there were still figures scheduled to be released? Now, I expected to be disappointed in the answer. I thought it was just going to be something like, well, they weren't making much money, so we tossed them out. Which makes sense, you know, I mean, a toy company, they're there to make money, and as much as the fandom occasionally tries to argue to the contrary, they're entitled to try to make a buck. But that was not the issue they cited. Now, allow me to regale you with their answer. First, you are correct that the Robot Heroes line will not be continuing past Transformers I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up. Unlike Star Wars and Marvel, which have expanded to include figure and vehicle play, the fact that our figures have both vehicle and robot modes limited our ability to extend the play pattern to just figure play. I'm not sure if that's a sentence. We felt that although the Robot Heroes line has performed well, it just made sense to end on a positive note. Hear that, guys? Positive note.
So we should be thanking them for canceling our happy toy line.
Exactly. So, you know, this response came back last week, and I thought about talking about the show, but I wanted to give it a little time. And, you know, sometimes I can say things a little impetuously, and I wanted to, you know, make sure I wasn't overreacting, not say anything too provocative, you know, say what I really mean. And after some thought, I just want to say, that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard. What the hell are they talking about? Okay, before I even dig in, let me recap this for you in English. Even though our toys are making money, we decided to stop making them because we couldn't make money in the exact same way we were making money in another line. That's the whole idea. Somebody went to business school for years and came back to tell us that. So even though this line's premise is such unmitigated awesome that several other companies have felt the need to steal it for lines such as Ninja Turtles, Batman, and even Doctor F***ing Who, Hasbro's decided it won't work for Transformers. They just can't do it. It's just not good enough synergy. Now, before we get sucked too far into the bog of eternal dumb that that premise represents, let's assume for a moment that the robot heroes could not be continued without vehicles. Let's just go there into Hasbro's little demented world. Okay.
Robot
now, they can't use vehicles because they are vehicles, which, you know, of course, makes sense in some way, which is a good point, I suppose, except for the Ark, the Nemesis, both versions of them in Beast Wars and other things, Autobot shuttles, Galvatron's ship, the Axel on the Dark Side, War World, and the car that hit Megatron driven by Rhinox.
You farted.
And probably about a half dozen other that Scaleface could name for me. And if you want to make play sets, they couldn't come up with anything. I mean, that would just be ridiculous, except, you know, maybe the interior of the Ark, the Hoover Dam, a Cybertron street, Shockwave's Tower, the Decepticon Sea Base, the Axelon's Bridge, the Darkseid's Bridge, Unicron's Head, Autobot City, Animated Detroit, a Sharkticon Pit, Dinobot Island, Megatron's Throne Room. No? None of those work for you? Don't like that idea? How about you break down and make some animated humans? Like, sorry. And Fanzone, and pair them with a non-transforming Bumblebee vehicle. You could put Sumdac with Megatron, or some of the cast of SUV with Swindle. How about a transforming animated Omega Supreme that could accommodate animated robot heroes? Or even, how about a G1 Omega Rocket? A Blitzwing shuttle I could fit a few cons into? Hell, I'd take an oversized Cosmos to crash Heroes Perceptor in. Now, if you think of these ideas are outdated, how about, is it any more outdated than, say, X-Wings from 1977? Speeder bikes from 1983? When Optimus Prime was a glint in Bob Budiansky's eye? For f***ing sake, Hasbro, pull your heads out of your exhaust ports. There are tons of options to expand the Robot Heroes line. You are limited only by your shoddy imaginations. While we're on the subject, I have another idea for how you can make some real quick Robot Heroes dough. You know those figures you already made? Prowl and Laserbeak? Sell them! You could pack, you know, or how about this? You could have repaint heroes. They could be Hasbro executives that you sell with little yellow buses. Just for reference, in case you hadn't noticed, this is not a positive motherfucking note. Thank you. That's all I'm saying. Then.
Well, I mean, we had Action Masters that rode vehicles.
Yeah.
But, you know, also, exactly. But if you have like little happy robot heroes riding a large transformer, it could also be a robot orgy, which would be kind of cool.
Micromasters had bases.
Yeah.
I just thought that excuse
was so lame.
It is lame. But you know what?
Well, it sounds like they were just trying to say, I mean, basically what they wanted to say was, it wasn't making enough money, so we didn't do it. So instead of saying that, they came up with lame.
No, why wouldn't they just say, it's not making enough money?
I know, like, that would be fine. Like, I would be okay with that.
Me too.
Yeah, I would be fine if they said, it's not making enough money. I'd be, oh, okay, whatever.
But you know, the other question.
I'd be happy about it, but I couldn't blame them for it.
The other Hasbro QA question came from me, and I was curious how Hasbro perused the fan media. And they check it all out, so they'll hear that. So fantastic, Ender.
So see, there you go.
You may single-handedly save Robot Heroes.
Maybe. Well, that would be great, because I got to say, anyone who doesn't think that those kind of vehicle ideas make sense, tell me they make more sense than Spider-Man in a boat car. A boat car.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Captain America's Wienermobile.
Oh. So I think the news is over. JD, tell us what's going on today in history.
Energon Marathon from 2004.
Heck yes.
April 9th of 2004.
Woo, Energon.
Lent us Starscream, the mysterious mercenary, Battle of the Asteroid Belt, Energon Tower, and Legend of Rodimus. Oh man. Rodimus. Wow.
Yeah. Great.
There you go.
I am Rodimus.
I am Rodimus Prime. So, Big Bad Toy Store, they have a spring clearance sale. Prices have been cut on hundreds of items, and they have over 2,000 total items on sale. Over 500 of these items have been discounted between 50 and 90% off. They've also added bonus sale menus with additional savings, 40% off G.I. Joe movie items, 20% off G.I. Joe 25th anniversary items, 30% off Transformers busts, and 30% off Star Trek movie items. Check them out at tfradio.net/BBTS because, of course, you know you want to.
Come on, you got to say it.
Which
got to say what?
The longer but shorter.
It's true. Awesome. They know it. They know it by now.
But it's so well.
I got my BBTS Nightmare for Commander.
Do you like it?
This week. I do. I can tell it's not entirely professionally designed, but it's still pretty damn cool.
So,
sweet.
I'm looking at something that that Rob just put into the chat window. That's pretty awesome. So, let's see here. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll be back here in a minute, right after this.
You're listening to Radio Free Cybertron, the official podcast of TFormers.com.
So Ender and Dave, or Kal-El Prime from Moonbase 2, had an interview this past weekend, and we are about to hear it. So Ender, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's with James Roberts, who's co-author of Last Stand of the Wreckers, which if you're not reading, you should be. He also wrote the only fan fiction Transformers novel that I'm aware of, Eugenesis.
Oh, yeah.
Which you can download in a PDF if you look industrial enough or if we post a link. And he's awesome. He knows his crap, and his comic book is fantastic. And everybody should take a listen.
Welcome to Moonbase 2.
Hello and welcome to a very special podcast brought to you in partnership by the Moonbase 2 podcast and by tformers.com and Radio Free Cybertron. My name is David, a.k.a. Kal-El Prime, if you don't know who I am. And I am joined by Tformers' own, the man of a million podcasts, really.
Podcast mercenary.
That's the one. It's Ender.
Yeah. Ender, hello everyone. And welcome.
Yes. So, dude, first of all, I just want to say thank you for setting this up because it was you who it's off your back.
Yeah. I due to screwing up in a review I wrote, I was put in contact with the magnificent James Roberts of much repute in both the fan fictionary circles and more recently the incredible, indelible, wonderful, fantastic, can't say enough good things about, and believe me, I've tried, Last Stand of the Wreckers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so it's really cool that James has decided to come on here, and hopefully you will enjoy what he has to say and what we have to ask him. So shall we just truck on with the interview?
Oh, absolutely. Let's roll out.
So it is our pleasure at this time to introduce... where do you start? Fan, novelist, all-round wreck and rule awesome dude.
this is good. You can have more of this.
it's the co-writer of Transformers Wreckers. It's Mr. James Roberts.
Yay!
Oh, I can hear the crowd. Yeah. Hello.
It's all right. Don't worry, James. Through the magic of editing, we'll put in cheers. And,
yeah. The crowd is going wild. Don't worry about it.
So thank you for taking the time to pop over here. And
No, it's lovely. Yes, thanks for the invitation.
Of course. Well, yeah. Well, we couldn't not talk to you. Believe us. It's just.
I know. I was pestering you so much, you know.
Oh, well.
So
I wouldn't quite put it that way.
So I suppose the best way to start is how we always start with these interviews. Is for anybody who is listening out there who may not know who James Roberts is, for shame, why don't you just give the listeners just a rundown of who James Roberts is?
Where have you been all our lives?
Where have I been all your lives? Okay, well, prison for the most part, but let's skip that part. No, really, well, okay, from a Transformers perspective, I suppose, I won't bore you with the other stuff, but Transformers-wise, okay, obviously I'm over here in Britain, and got into Transformers in the mid-80s, not from the very beginning, actually, sadly. Over here, we had the... Well, we had the cartoon in a way. We had sort of edited snippets, you know, 2-3 minutes of the cartoon on one of the channels at breakfast time. But that sort of passed me by, and it was really through the comic, through the Marvel UK comic, that I got into this. Actually, that's not quite true. I was given Blitzwing as a birthday present, in 86, I suppose, and then coincidentally a couple of months after that, I would have seen the movie at the cinema, and then, actually, it was only really then that I started getting the weekly comic. So actually, I think, 1997 was the first one I saw, so that's part two of Prey. So I missed Target 2006, you know, I missed a lot of really good stuff, in the sense of, being able to read it at the time. So I missed it, going fortnightly into weekly, and I missed Dinobot Hunt, and I missed, again, Target 2006 and all the rest of it. But I did get...
We didn't get half of that at all.
Well, that's true. This is true, yes. I can't complain too much. I did get in there in time for the first appearance of Rodimus Prime and Deathbed, and in fact, the first issue that I, when I started subscribing to it, or getting it delivered, by the newspaper man, was issue 113, so that was a fantastic first one to get, with Prime on the cover and Jeff Senior art inside, Deathbed's first appearance, and it sort of took off from there, really. So got the toys at the same time, and then sort of stopped really getting the toys too much in the early 90s. But even though the comic finished, G2 as well came and went, because of Transmasters UK. There was a way into the whole Transformers universe. Still, there was a way to add to it and expand it and so on. So, did you want to talk about Transformers UK a bit? I suppose your listeners will know or would have heard of it, I'm sure, and will know what it's about. But I can talk about that if you like.
Yeah, well, a little bit of a nice, especially for in the US, like we of course didn't weren't there for that being Transformers UK. So,
yeah. Transmasters, it was a US club, wasn't it, originally? Leanne Elliott, I think, was one of the people credited with getting it off the ground in the late 80s, I think. And somehow it crossed the pond, and there was a letter from a UK fan in the UK comic sort of announcing it. And there was a contact address, and this was back in 1990, possibly 91. And just before the comic folded, really, so it was fortuitous. The timing was good. It was pen pals, I suppose. You don't get them anymore, do you? It's all internet stuff. But it was a group of fans that would write to each other. UK fans who'd grown up on the same sort of diet of Simon Furman strips, and but it was more than just sharing an interest. The idea was, you'd collaborate and you'd add to and enrich this, very well established universe. I mean, by this point, we're talking, after issue 80 of the American comic and after 3-2 issues of the British one. So you've got almost, a good 7-8 years worth of material, a really good foundation for a universe. So this group of fans, and there wasn't a huge amount of us, we sort of carried on adding to this universe. And I think because Furman had, it's a good discipline actually, because Furman had written within the framework of the American comics, really, by necessity. Everybody knows this, but the frequency of the British comic meant that there wasn't enough material to go around, so there was a need to create some UK originated stuff. So Furman was writing within the confines of the strip being produced in America, and sort of I suppose there was that sense of discipline and collaboration that went across to Transmasters UK, and a group of us, myself and Martin McVeigh, Matt Dallas, Andy Dornan, you know, talented guys, got together and made sure that, you know, various threads and strands weren't left hanging. We took the story forward and we filled in blanks. You know, stuff that fans do all the time, you know. But I think what set Transmasters UK apart, I think at least, was the collaborative nature of it. And everybody was you know, adding and augmenting other stories. So that was good. That was good fun. And that kept things going in the wilderness years, really, before Beast Wars came along. And even, you know, even before G2 came along. And in fact, when G2 finished after its 12 issues, and there's the Leaf Maximo stuff and all these big questions left unanswered, that's really when Transmasters UK came into its own, because there was I'm really rambling here, actually, sorry. There was a British G2 comic. It wasn't through Marvel, it was through Fleetway, I think, and that only lasted 5 issues. But in the last issue, they printed the cover of a Transmasters UK fanzine, which was called Continued Generation 2, CG2. And that picked up from the end of, you know, issue 12 of the American title, and you know, ran with it from there. So suddenly, you know, all these readers, these comic readers, had someone to write to, had a contact, and they got into Transmasters and, you know, jumped on board at the right moment. And then there was a real surge in material being written, fan fiction being written. So yes, that's really how I've come to be here, in a sense. Toys first, then the movie, then Transformers UK, and then good old fan fiction, which does have a bad press bar and arch, but it's a good training ground.
Wow,
it does genuinely seem that the work that, you know, trans fans have done has always been held in quite a high regard amongst the community who actually read them, as opposed to general fan fiction, which, as you quite rightly said, gets quite a bad rap for the most part. Going back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, the discipline and actually taking something that was already existing but obviously had a few holes left in it after Marvel dropped it, do you think that's why that is, or do you just think it's just you're lucky in terms of the caliber of people that you attract, in terms of the talent that they bring with them?
That's an interesting question, really. Maybe we were just lucky. And I mean, we were all, not all the stories we wrote, not any of us wrote fantastic stuff all the time. But, you know, the best stuff, I suppose it was a positive sort of generative process, because the best stuff inspired, you know, similar type of work. You know, the stories that really rang out, the fan fiction stories that rang out, would themselves have sequels and be built upon. And yeah, so the good stuff endured, really. But you know, at the same time, I was saying to Nick as well, I mean, the other day, you know, it's and a guy, Mark Stevenson, who did a lot of good stuff as well. We look back on those days, really. I mean, because although Transmasters UK still exists as an entity, and I know there's good fan fiction still being produced, but you know, back, I don't know what, 15 years ago, there was a lot of stuff being written. And good stuff.
And how did what I'm more curious about is obviously the historical aspect of it, things like that. You were saying pen pals and stuff, and obviously we're talking, well, like you said, Transmasters was late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Transfans was early 90s. So we're talking about really before the boom of the internet.
Yeah.
I'm just curious as to what the collaborative process, if there was one, how you guys... You know, I can't imagine running backwards and forwards to the post office and things like that.
Oh, no, in those days, yes. No, in those days, you'd be sort of hovering by the front door waiting for the postman to come. And, you know, and at its peak, you'd be getting a lot of mail. A lot of mail would come through. But really, in terms of creating the stories and expanding the universe, there was sort of the spine of the club was a handful of fanzines. There was the Informer or Trans Talk. It went through various incarnations, but that was sort of the newsletter. And actually, that, I remember that newsletter had a proper scoop actually near the end, near the end of Transformers UK, because as you know, it was destined to continue beyond issue 332. You know, they had plans to it was going to go monthly from issue 333, and there was going to be a new strip in it, albeit only 5 pages a month. But yeah, the Informer sort of, you know, was the one that broke that news. Although, you know, plans changed in the end. Anyway, you'd have these fanzines, and I did one myself, edited one myself called Trans Text. It was, you can, yeah, there's a very handy prefix actually, the trans thing. But no, I did a text based or story based fanzine, and the other members of the club would submit stories for it, and you know, they'd be in there, and this, theoretically it was monthly, but it was very erratic in when it came out. But you'd be talking about 60 or 70 pages of of text, and you know, this was sort of, you know, good old fashioned post-punk type fanzine where you'd have, you know, the densely packed text, you know, the old typewritten text as well. But no, you had this sort of wealth of material in a fanzine. And when people collaborated, it wasn't so much, well, it was very, very rarely on the same story. It was more, you know, that you'd be the author of your own story, and that would be published in a fanzine, and then other writers would build upon that. Or you'd get left to develop your own, you know, your own strand or your own subplots. It wasn't rigid and it wasn't too disciplined or territorial, but you know, you could have a group of characters or a setting or a time, and that would be, you know, you'd be left alone to sort of develop that over time, which was good as well. So some people wrote stories, you know, thousands of years into the future, and others preferred to go back and do sort of, you know, pre-war Cybertronian stuff.
And then I suppose coming out of the trans fan stuff, really, there is nobody else that I can think of, at least in terms of the Transformers community, who then decided off their own back to undertake the task that you decided to take for yourself with Eugenesis. Now, we're not talking like, you know, in case anybody hasn't read it, we're not talking about, with this, a 12-page mini story or something like that. We're actually talking 500-plus page novel that you sat down and wrote. What was the impetus and what was the building blocks for Eugenesis?
Staggering hubris, really, you know, and arrogance. It started in... It started with that fanzine, with the fanzine I edited, Trans Text. Eugenesis, well, the genesis of Eugenesis was it's still a big story. It was called Invasion, and it started the prologue to Invasion started in issue one of Trans Text, and it ran throughout the 7 or 8 issues of Trans Text, and it hadn't finished. I knew where it was going to end up eventually, but it hadn't got there yet, and I mean, this was about 92 or 93, and I just thought, really, that by this point we had nearly 10 years' worth of material, either sort of, you know, canonical stuff through the Marvel comics or fan-written stuff through Transmasters UK. And I thought it was, you know, a strong enough framework, and it was durable enough and good enough, really, to sustain. I mean, this was the gamble. This was my thinking. It was good enough and strong enough to sustain a novel-length story. And I suppose, I don't know, I'm trying to think. I didn't think to myself, I'm going to write a novel, write, what can it be about? I thought, you know, I've got an idea for a story here. It's a big story, and, you know, to do it justice in the telling, it's going to end up quite long, and so it proved. And so I suppose I sort of put the Invasion stuff to one side, started again. And when I was about a third of the way through in terms of blocking it out and, you know, doing the synopsis and sort of working it up, then I started to think, actually, this is going to be novel length by necessity, as I say. And at that point I thought, right, I'm going to make the scope even bigger, and you know, if I'm going to spend many, many hours and days writing it, there has to be, you know, a hell of a payoff at the end. It has to be, in its own way, sort of, you know, universe changing. And fair enough, you know, it exists in the Marvel universe, or the Transformers Marvel universe, and certainly the Transmasters universe. It's not going to have resonance beyond that, but, you know, within those confines, or within that context, it has to be earth-shattering, you know, it has to be big. And so I upped the stakes and fleshed it out, and then in the end, as you say, it turned out to be to be huge in length, at least. But it took me, I suppose, I started writing Eugenesis in the late 97, perhaps 96, 97, and finished it in the year 2000. And, you know, of course, it was never going to be published in licensed characters. Couldn't make any money out of it. You know, it wouldn't expect to. But I thought to myself, well, given its size and given that I'm proud of it, I want to do it justice in terms of how it's presented. And so, on a strictly not-for-profit basis, I paid for it to be bound so it looked good. And then I just asked people to pay postage and packing, and that was that, really.
You wouldn't happen to have one of those around, would you?
Well, I can only afford to print about 150 of them, and it was just before what was the name of the convention now? The Transforce, was it?
It was Transforce.
The 2001 convention. And so, yeah, I printed as many as I could afford to, and I sort of lugged them up in a suitcase, and then they sold out really quickly, you know. I've only got one for myself, and I've only got a spare, so I've got two copies of it now. And what happened though is, I think it was about 2006, 2007. With help, it was sort of put online, and it's still there now online. As a complete document, you know, as a PDF that you can download, and actually it's a quite substantially re-edited version as well. I went through it sort of methodically, and there's always some typos in there and stuff, but some more substantive stuff as well that I wanted to tweak and improve, hopefully. So the definitive version of Eugenesis in its entirety is out there now for. If anybody's interested, to have a look at it. But it was well received, and that was gratifying.
Well, we'll most definitely post links and stuff if people haven't had the opportunity to go ahead and read it and stuff. Just out of curiosity, do you know off the top of your head how many characters you managed to fit into that thing?
Into Eugenesis? I don't actually. I mean, I'll tell you what. I know there were certain characters I did deliberately, avoided. And it's funny, because, I remember when I started putting together the cast, there were some characters there like Nightbeat. I mean, they were fan favourites in any case. But I tried to push into the spotlight those characters who hadn't been paid much attention in the Marvel run. And it's funny because nowadays when you've got B1 as an entity in its own right, and the characters are routinely sort of disinterned and put on the main stage and written about. It seems funny now to think that characters like, Blue Streak and Trailbreaker, and Mirage, certainly, characters like that, I thought, well, they've sort of been unfairly ignored over the years, so I'm going to sort of put them center stage and give them a piece of the action at the expense of people like Jazz and Bumblebee and Grimlock, and I made sure that those sort of scene stealers were sidelined early on in the story.
Well, don't worry, everybody. As long as Simon's still around, Grimlock will still be with us. curiosity, actually, more than anything else, as opposed to a hard and fast answer, you obviously grew up with the Marvel comic books. Mm. And obviously, Eugenesis and all of the trans fan stuff was all sort of birthed out of Simon Furman's writings back in the 80s and 90s. Obviously, 2000, that was when Dreamwave entered the game, and since Dreamwave we've gone on to IDW as well, which you are now working with. When you compare what we've currently got in terms of comic books and what ID and what Dreamwave did back against the Marvel stuff, how do you rate it? I mean, are you? I don't want to say you want to, blink at sort of art. Oh, it's all Marvel sort of thing. But what's your stance on the different takes that we've had?
Well, I think with each iteration, you've had to. It was right, of course. It was right that Dreamwave started again, and it was equally right that RPW started again. But you know, with a new sort of sweeping storyline built around the core cast. What I find fascinating really is because Transformers, you know, have grown ever more popular, and you know, there's an ever broader fan base who, particularly with the internet now, can become intimately familiar with, you know, all the 300, 400 G1 characters and so on. And when it comes to building a cast, you know, I'll tell you what. Well, with Marvel, because the way, you know, the toys would come out and you would have to find a way to include them in the storyline, but it would be that the cast would grow gradually, and the storyline would grow to accommodate these new characters. And you know, with Dreamwave and IDW, you know all the characters are already there, and you know, you can pick and choose really your ideal cast, you know. And so what's been interesting about, you know, IDW certainly is that you can have, you know, you can have Nightbeat in there almost from day one, and you can have Thunderwing indeed, you know, okay, not the same character, but Thunderwing can be there from the beginning too. So you've got, you know, I think it's right that they started from scratch, and I think IDW certainly has done a fantastic job at sort of rebuilding the mythos. But they, you know, they're lucky in the sense of you know, they can choose from 15 years worth of characters, and Simon certainly has exploited that freedom, you know, and fair play to me, I think it's worked. That's a professional interview pause, isn't it? Where you think, right, go on then, say some more stuff.
No, yeah, well, that's it. You never want to interrupt people. You never, you know, when you just start talking to people, you start worrying in case you keep cutting them off and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, obviously, IDW, that was when Nick got his professional start.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, you're good friends with Nick. What was your relationship like prior to him getting the gig with IDW?
Well, we were fans of each other's work, you know, fan-produced work. Nick had done some fantastic stuff on the... well, it goes back to the, you know, the Transmasters UK sort of flagship fanzine that continued Generation 2, as it was called, and... issue 25 of that was sort of, you know, a milestone issue, and Nick, I think that was Nick's, that may have been Nick's debut, sort of in terms of, you know, his fan stuff, and it was fantastic, you know, it was awe-inspiring, and it really elevated the story and so on. So yeah, I was certainly a fan of his work, and he was around then when Eugenesis when Eugenesis came out. And he's always been very good in sort of singing Eugenesis' praises. So no, we were friends, and we'd met a couple of times at conventions and so on. And as you say, with internet making all these things much easier, we would chew the fat online and on the phone. And I was, you know, very, very happy for him when he got his break with IDW. It's thoroughly deserved. And you know, he was very good to me in that, you know, he sort of, there'd be little nods in some of his strip work. I mean, Eugenesis, the book appears in Maximum Dinobots and stuff like that. So yeah, he was that was very well received by me. and then he's gone from strength to strength, of course. You know, I think it was very, very good that IDW gave him the cop spotlight. You know, to roachify. I think Nick is good enough to be a verb, really.
And a good verb at that.
A good verb, yeah. Exactly, yes, not like not a pejorative verb. No, an exalted verb.
I don't know why. I think we need to get T-shirts printed.
with Nick on.
Yeah, you know, and it's... if you know, just yeah, roach. You know, it's a symbol straight away.
Short impact already was giving him a cult. So.
Yeah, that was the bad idea. That one wouldn't fly. How did so then? Obviously, you said that you were obviously friends and things like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, All Hail Megatron comes out, and then Coda comes out, and then then number 15 of Coda comes out with the Prowl spotlight, for want of a better phrase. How did your involvement,
which is still the best comic of all time, probably.
In case anybody doesn't remember,
just in case, like, ended it. You know, the thing is, too, you may not be familiar with this. I am not famous for liking things.
I am not
the easy pass here.
you've got to be won over, is it? Okay.
That's an actual endorsement. Ender does not like much.
Ender likes getting himself in trouble.
Yeah.
Coda, and Nick's fantastic story. Well, no, he emailed me and said, I've been given this to do, hooray. We'd share ideas and we'd show each other what we were working on, and he said, hey, you know, here's the script. Would you like a look? We'd give feedback to each other. So he said any feedback, gratefully received, and so I fed back, and he was gracious enough to sort of ask for an acknowledgement in the issue itself, you know. So I suppose, you know, as a sounding board, really. I mean, I'm not gonna say that I didn't script any of it. I may have added, you know, suggested the odd word here and there, but that was the extent of it. But I mean, it was fully formed, and Prowl was fully formed, and I know that that's one of the big hits with that story, isn't it? Really, it's sort of that incarnation of Prowl, and sort of that insight into his sort of more Machiavellian side, perhaps, or more pragmatic side, shall we say, of Prowl. But no, like I said, essentially, you know, Nick was kind enough to show me the script in its not quite its final form, and he asked for my take on it, which I duly gave. A couple of things found their way into the final product, and yeah, he was, because he's a decent chap, he sort of made sure my name was there on the page.
Well, you officially get our award for best sounding board ever.
With Wreckers, it's I don't know if you can sort of have two sounding boards facing each other, but that's sort of what's
that's collaboration. It's showing. It's great. We'll get to that. Gushing later.
We don't want to focus too much on Prowl when Ender's around. Otherwise, we could
be talking for days.
Yeah. Oh right. Okay. So I see.
Yeah. Well, and Dave will tell you, you know, shutting me up for this long, you got to be pretty interesting to keep me this quiet this long. This got to be a record.
I've been trying for months to try and shut them.
Actually, Ender, I'm going to ask you a question now. Given you're a fan of Prowl, have you read any of Eugenesis?
I wish. I have a lot of trouble reading extended things online. Like, yeah. I can read a few pages on the computer, but I was asking if you... I was entirely serious. If you had a copy of around, I would totally try and snag it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe I can lend you a copy if that's what it takes. Because I say it only because Prowl is one of the central characters in Eugenesis.
I will make a point of getting my hands on one way or the other. I've already been like conspiring in the back of my mind if I can use any connection I have to see if I could like get someone to do a kind of anniversary printing of the book just so I could have one.
Well,
I know who would do that? How long has it been since you wrote it? It came out in
01. Right. Like I say, you know, it's the good old rules of fanfic. You know, it's essentially a glorified fanzine, and it's not for profit and all the rest of it. So your best bet is online, but maybe I'll make an exception and I can send you a spare copy for to satisfy your Prowl cravings.
Oh, well, that would... I have no words for that kindness. That would be awesome.
why is it you keep getting all the stuff sent to you?
charm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember my other favorite character?
Optimus Prime.
Swindle.
Oh, Swindle. He's thoroughly loving
Costa Swindle. I'm named for Dead End because I, no, I like Swindle before.
You've got Swindle in the own guy, haven't you, Sam?
Yeah. So. You're that's where my name comes from Dead End being called, in fanfic stuff I wrote, Swindle would call Dead End Ender. And the name stuck. Again, I am not easily pleased, so my pessimism stuck with that name.
I can see it. I can see your tech specs forming in front of my eyes.
I do have one question about the Prowl, and I know this was obviously Nick's story, and obviously you were just there as sort of a sounding board and things like that. But what I'm curious about is, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but well, it's not to you, but to both myself and Ender, we are absolutely petrified of the upcoming Spotlight Prowl.
Right.
Just because of the fear that we have of retconning what was done in those 15 pages.
Yeah, basically we kind of see it this way, that we had this genius, wonderful, perfect Prowl we couldn't have been happier with, and then all of a sudden we had this Prowl that didn't seem to make very much damn sense, and the response we've gotten back has been, oh, no, don't worry. We're going to screw Prowl up for you. We'll explain it. We'll make him suck. Don't worry. So we're a little worried.
It's out this month, isn't it?
It's the back end of this month.
Change is bad in this instance, I think, in their own world.
The question that I was going to pose to you was, do you know if there was intention or forethought? Because what I was expecting to happen was that this whole business with Prowl and what he was setting up there was actually going to be a springboard into Wreckers. However, Wreckers doesn't seem to be touching on that at all, at least within the first three issues. Was this something where Wreckers was already on the cards and therefore, Nick was planning it that way? Or do you think Nick just thought to himself, I'm just going to write the most badass Prowl in 15 pages that anybody's ever seen?
Okay, right. Lots of questions there. I think, I think Prowl is a multifaceted character. I think, you don't want sort of a one-note character. And what I'm saying is, there's a certain... Yeah, IDW does know what it's doing. Nick and I have both seen the Spotlight, and it's good. It is good, and it won't upset people.
Can we quote you on that? Because we know your phone number. If it comes,
until we're recording everything you say.
it's not just the three of us. No, there's going to be other people hearing this.
Between liking the new Doctor and hearing you say that Spotlight Prowl isn't going to make me cry. I'm having a great day. I've been worrying about that for months. Okay. Is that, that's like an endorsement by someone whose judgment on Prowl I trust.
Oh, good. Well, yes. The Spotlight is good. And also, the threads or the seeds that were sown with the Coda Prowl story, or rather the Prowl that you saw in that story hasn't been forgotten either. You'll see, there's still two issues of records to go, you can read into that what you will, but I mean, there's various plates that will continue to be spun. Okay, is that all right? Not wanting to give anything away.
No. We don't want anything spoiled, but what we want is, we want that friendly hand on the shoulder, the one that, just to say, it'll be all right, son. It'll be all right.
you can go cash this in at IDW now, possibly even with Andy Schmidt. Just to tell him that Ender promises, because on your word, not to bitch about Spotlight Prowl anymore until he's ready.
Which would be good, because if Andy ever catches up with Ender, you're in trouble, man.
Dude, Ender, man, Andy was hanging out with my mom like 2 weeks ago. I swear to God.
I tell you what, Andy, you're becoming an ever more complex character. And the more I find out about you,
Oh, he's trouble. He's trouble. That's his thing. he's just trying. He's basically you know, he is actually the Prowl of the Transformers comic book reviewing community. You know, he's quite happy to just hang back and then wait for somebody to make a mistake and then bang.
So you're sort of the puppet master, you're there. And...
yeah. And then next thing you know, I get to play War for Cybertron this month and nobody else does.
Shut up.
See, it, you know, the prizes just keep on accruing, don't they, really?
I suppose we should talk about what everybody who's listening to this is like. Get to Wreckers. Start talking about Wreckers.
I remember Wreckers.
Yeah. Now, what I'm curious about is when this show, when this series got announced, what? BotCon last year, was it? I think. Or so, somewhere around there. It was Nick writing and drawing a 5-issue miniseries. How did you come on board with Wreckers? Because back in August of last year with Auto Assembly, Nick hadn't started it yet, but I'm just wondering where your introduction came in.
I formally began, my involvement formally began in August last year, so it wasn't that long after. I guess after BotCon, but no, you're right. It was announced as a Roach written and Roach drawn project. I mean, it really came down to the amount of time between the announcement and the launch date, which was January, and the fact that it was going to be Nick, penciling it and inking it and scripting it, and it was a lot for Nick to do in the time allotted. And I was brought in to co-write. We worked on the, but there were some story seeds already there. Nick had issue one sort of almost, you know, as you do, that was almost fully formed in his head. So there wasn't. That's why, you know, I don't have a credit for the scripting on SC1. Some words in there are mine, but not many. That pretty much resembles what Nick had in mind from the outset. But the overall story was, I suppose, given a good going over. We brought it together, I've said it in other places. It's been truly sort of collaborative from SC2 onwards in terms of the script and so on. But no, as to why it didn't remain a pure Roach product, it's mainly to do with timing and the incredible toll that doing 5 issues single handed would take on anybody. Really. Because this, that's the other thing, Nick draws like a demon. He slaves over those pages, and you can see that. And it was a big ask to do all of that. In the time allowed, really, it turns out. So anyway, I'm personally pleased at how it turned out.
Yeah. Well, so are we.
That's a selfish perspective. Yeah. I'm sorry, but there we go.
It's a shared sentiment. I mean,
good.
I'd say artist wise, Nick is certainly my absolute favorite working in Transformers by far today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has a phenomenal. Very, very, very evocative drawing style, really. And I've seen it mentioned elsewhere on the net, but the expressions that, you know, that can be conveyed, with these Transformers, you've got a faceplate, and you've got two eyes to play with. Basically, you've got two eyes with which to show, to show what a character's feeling, and Nick, you know, somehow manages it. And a case in point, really, is Rotorstorm is the most expressive. He's got a mouth, but if you look in issue 3 at the page when, you know, Rotorstorm is reacting to Overlord's laughter, it's all there, really. It's all the nervousness and the apprehension and the sudden realization of what's about to happen. And yeah, he's peerless. He really is. He's very, very good.
I'm actually just going to ask this one purely to indulge your ego.
only one, is it?
I'm asking this. As a fan myself, and I'm sure, you know, you've done all this fan work. You're confident within yourself to write a Transformers novel, which you've done, and people have received it well. So you've got this good feedback. You then get the, you know, the credit. How did it actually feel to hold in your hand, you know, something which you have professionally done, with which revolves around Transformers?
Oh, well, it was beyond words. It was fantastic. It was, I mean, we're talking over 20 years of being a fan, as you say, and sort of, you know, the 90s, sort of slaving away on the book. It strikes a chord, because it comes down to this idea of fan fiction again, and the way it's received, and the sort of the validity that some people don't give to fan fiction. You know, it's a whole different discussion to have, really, as to when a piece of writing sort of becomes legitimate. But you know, there are some people that won't read Eugenesis on principle. Now, fair enough, if they pick it up and they skim through it and it's not to their taste, then fine. You know, I can understand that. But it was said to me that I'm not going to read it because it's not canon, and it may have characters in it that weren't toys or that haven't appeared in the Marvel comic before or whatever, and that's always struck me as odd, you know. So I suppose, writing the Transformers story professionally, it sort of bestowed a certain legitimacy upon the whole enterprise, really, which was very nice. And it's been well received, so that's really heartening as well. But the bottom line was what a fantastic feeling. I'm very pleased to have been given the opportunity to do something like that. You know, very very good. It was a dream come true, shall we say? It was a dream come true.
So you said that Nick pretty much had issue one in the bag when you came on board. So I'm assuming that means that all of the key components of the story, in terms of all of the major characters, Overlord, Pyro,
so Iron Fist. We're probably looking into Nick's toy box more than yours.
I think we both have Overlord. I don't have Iron Fist, unfortunately. If anyone wants to swap an Iron Fist for Eugenesis, that's a good swap. No.
don't say that, because you guys are responsible for my wallet being less.
Oh, I was just about to say. Oh, I haven't found an Overlord and a Pyro yet, but I've picked up about the whole cast.
I bought one
of those little mini Fort Maxes so he could fit into the cast. I have a cast question on that. This is kind of a technical thing. It's issue one, so maybe you won't. At one point, Kickback, who I bought, by the way, is pulling the head off of a Decepticon. And as he does that, he calls him Borehole. Now, my question is that a character name, or is that an insult?
I think it's a character name. But I think it also doubles as a good insult as well. And actually, on that front, you know, there's Dipstick in issue one as well.
Yeah.
He, talking of insults, in an earlier draft of the script, he really let loose in terms of a whole rich variety of Transformers-based insults and swear words, really, I suppose you could say. But for reasons of space and decency, they sort of had to go. But I think Borehole, I think that's his name, bless him, or what's his name.
Yeah.
Now,
I can just hear it that way, like, you know what that means here? Borehole? You know?
But there are certain mechanized swear words that have a certain resonance, I think, and Borehole is one of them, really. It carries a certain weight.
Now, obviously, we've only got issue 3 of Wreckers as it stands at the moment, and there's only one person. There's only one person in this conversation who knows how it ends. But what I'm curious about is it your intention when you guys were writing this to really be as brutal as you have been so far? with the series. I mean, the title itself says it all, Last Stand of the Wreckers, but it's very rare in a Transformers comic book, at least in the last decade, where we've had as much brutality as what you guys have done. I mean, is there a sense you're just pushing the envelope, or...?
It comes from two things, really. Firstly, it's worth saying that in terms of sort of in-your-face action or violence or whatever you want to call it, the really striking set pieces, I suppose, are the first few pages of issue one, when Overlord, gate crashes, Skyquake's party, and a couple of scenes in issue three, really. The bulk of issue one and issue two are sort of, they're building up the characters, they're setting the scene, they're sort of laying down various subplots, giving a bit of color and depth and detail to the backstory. It's interesting when people say, Wreckers really is no holds barred, it's full on, it's in your face. There are definitely scenes and moments which are worthy of that description. But it's not sort of, full on non-stop violence for the sake of violence throughout. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I suppose, to build on that point, Nick and I have tried to make things horrific and violent and so on for a reason. One way of looking at Wreckers is, I suppose, the Dirty Dozen in space, really. It's a suicide mission. These guys, they get their hands dirty. They're wading through the corpses, really. Theirs isn't a good job.
You need a sequel called Inglorious Wreckers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, lots of scalpings and things going on. So it had to be. It had to show that war is hell. And it had to show, the reality of these things, and that meant some decapitations. It meant some chest explosions and all the rest of it. And I'm afraid there's worse to come in issues 4 and 5. The other thing is that Nick and I have always had this. We have conversations about, what does it take to kill a Transformer? How do you know when a Transformer is dead and so on and so forth? And as a fan, I mean, one of the most enduring images, something which really haunted me for years and still does, really, was back in the Legacy of Unicron, issue 147 of the UK comic, when Deathhead was hunting Shockwave down in the year 2008, and beats him and really finishes him off by literally pulling his brain module out of his head and crushing it in close up, and that was MK. That's preceded by several sort of, full-on explosions and things. His body, in tatters, really. But it was that sort of full stop at the end of it. It was that cold and callous and definitive ending of that character's life that was really shocking. And I think there's a risk that you can become desensitized to death among Transformers. I know Nightbeat God, was dispatched by a shot to the head in Fairman's sort of wrap up, wasn't it, really? So Nick and I wanted to show that, yes, this is full on warfare, albeit sort of on a sort of smaller scale. It's tight, and it's violent, and people are going to die, and you're going to know, by and large, when they are dead. There's going to be no ambiguity about it.
The visual language was not ambiguous. Technically, yeah. What part did he hit? What's this? What's that? It's like, what makes me know is he's dead? Perceptor is wiping his brain off his face. That's how I know he's dead.
It wasn't like if it was a film, you'd still have a gentle panning shot to some net curtains fluttering in the breeze. It wasn't that sort of, freighted with symbolism. No, it was just someone getting a shot in their head. And as Iron Fist says, a lot of viscera. Afterwards. And actually, that's something else which Nick has sort of added to the Transformers universe, I think, particularly with Wreckers, and that is the amount of lubricant that Transformer bodies contain. It's a good substitute for blood and guts, it serves to sort of underscore the goriness of the whole affair.
It worked.
I did find it ironic just where you referenced Nightbeat being dispatched by a shot to the head. And very much when Hardhead killed him in Revelation, it was very much in and out, very clean, one down.
Yeah.
Brother Storm wasn't that lucky.
No. He had a head full of powder burn. Did you think as people reading this, sort of as it unfolded, did you think Rotor Storm was going to be the first down?
Not until Overlord started laughing.
Really?
Yeah, as soon as I started to worry. When he told the joke, I was like, oh man.
And when he laughed back at him, you just knew at that point.
We knew there was going to be a casualty that issue. At some point, someone had said that there would definitely be a death. Yeah, there was that whole poster, like, someone's going down.
Nick and I had great fun with that one, and Chris Murray put that together for us. It was fantastic. It was supposed to a good bit of speculation, get a good bit of speculation going. But the whole laughter bit was inspired partially by the end of The Killing Joke, Batman and the Joker are sort of... That is an ambiguous ending. We sort of took that and thought that we'll remove the ambiguity there. We'll have a definite outcome to that to the encounter.
The only difference was the Joker walked away.
Yeah.
So does that by definition mean that Overlord is more badass than Batman?
Well, actually, I was going to say it the other way. I'd say the equivalent scene would have been if at the end of the joke the Joker pulled out a little revolver, put it right to Batman's head, and he didn't have time to move. Well, that's the end of that, I guess.
I would have, we even toyed with the idea of having a, just to sort of, ram home, I suppose, not ram home, no, to underline the sort of, the parallels, we were going to have some sort of sprinkler system, in the pit, and so you would have had the very famous, spattering raindrops around there, but, that was taking it too far. It was enough to have someone, to have Rhoda Storm, bless him, almost literally bite the bullet at that point.
Right after this scene, Overlord makes a line that you pointed out to me, which is, of course, a famous quote of one of my favorite villains of all time, the Master, from Doctor Who. And it drives me to the question, so when Overlord speaks, what voice do you hear in your head?
Personally, and Nick will have another voice. I do hear the Master in my head, actually. A Doctor Who villain, but because, and you and I were having a chat about this, weren't we, before the interview started proper, it would be sort of the John Sim Master, the latter day Master that I hear, in part. But the Overlord, an amalgam of different sort of villains, and he hopefully brings his own sort of unique traits to it. But that there are certain scenes when you can hear him sort of talking in that rather erudite and civilized way. He is sort of above it all, often. As we've seen, he's not averse to getting his hands dirty, but he's far more. He enjoys he enjoys playing the long game, and he enjoys having other people do his dirty work for him in such a way that ideally screws them up as well. That's when he'd be happiest.
Couple of small questions just in regards to certain things that take place inside of Wreckers. And I just want to say, just for the record, I think... Even with issue 3, the tension you guys are building in the first 3 issues has been absolutely phenomenal. You would not believe how much I got a sinking feeling in my stomach when the reference was made about the fact that a certain, shall we say, small in stature robot pointed out that he'd lost a lot of friends on a mission to rescue somebody who he didn't necessarily think was
wrong.
I'm terrified now. What is going to happen?
We noticed that, just in case you're wondering. We at least noticed that.
But the question I've got, and I really need to ask this, because I when Kickoff showed up in issue 1, I loved it because I was always a big fan of Kickoff. I always thought he was a character that was never used, but I always just liked the look of him and things like that. And the line, alt modes off our whips, was fantastic. He ripped his head off. My question is, I don't want to know what deal Overlord offered him. I just want to know if he said yes or no.
I'll tell you something. We've been very careful with the series that it's Okay. Although there's a wider resonance to it, as you'll see in the remaining issues, there are ripples that go beyond these five issues, insofar as they inform the broader IDW Transformers universe. But from a narrative perspective, in terms of nearly every single question that's raised within Wreckers, it is resolved within Wreckers. And okay, we've seen Kickoff's dead body in issue three, but you know there's still a few questions to answer there, and you know read issues four and five, and you know.
Oh, fantastic! See, I just imagine it's like, are you happy? Something as simple as that.
Yeah.
And then if he says no, he says, oh, well, you don't like my hospitality. And if he says yes, he goes, well, I'm going to make you ecstatic now. You know, that sort of like really evil, twisted, there's no way out of this.
I seem to remember, there's a Douglas Adams thing where on several pages of the guide to his Starship Titanic game, if you look in the one corner, it says in sequence, happy? And if you turn the page, it says, really? And if you turn the page again, it says, why?
I think you're right. There's that edge of absolute unpredictability with Overlord, and at this stage, who knows what rewards he offers in his quarters. Yeah.
Who was responsible for Black Shadow in issue two? I mean Overlord is
more people I have to buy.
Overlord is a character who a lot of people know, especially in the UK, thanks to the release of the Super God Masterfalls, and things like that, and you know, quite relatively famous. But Black Shadow, even though he showed up in Masterfalls, was just a complete surprise. I'm just wondering whose idea that was.
Well, I tell you what, I can talk about Black Shadow, but Nick and I have sort of made there's like a pact of sorts in terms of the code of co-writers. We're going to try and avoid saying who did what, because it'll just.
All right.
But yeah, Black Shadow as his cameo was in part designed to sort of stoke some flames and to get the hardcore fans excited, and also because you have to look beyond the sort of immediate parameters, don't you, in terms of a Transformers cast that stretches back 25 years. You know, there's lots of interesting little characters dotted around. I mean, Black Shadow is, there was a need for another phase sixer, essentially, and there's only so many characters that you think could realistically, fill that role. Black Shadow would be one of them, arguably. So there he is. And what became of Black Shadow?
So, I mean, obviously, if this is brought up at any point or anything like that, the way I looked at it was, and this was the terrifying thought that I had, and again, this is a testament to how one thing can just send somebody off on a completely different... I looked at that and I thought to myself, oh God, at some point somebody perfected Thunderwing. Because obviously with Black Shadow being a retool and repaint of the Thunderwing toy, that was the thing I was thinking was, you know, phase six, oh my God, what if they've actually, like, what if somewhere down the line, at some point, somebody turned around and went, you know this Thunderwing idea, how it was really bad? Yeah, well, I figured out how to get it to work, and I'm still terrifying. So it was just, I loved it. I saw him, and I was just like, wow, that's really, really, really cool. And I think you guys really deserve credit for that, for not... sticking with Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, Jazz, Grimlock.
Well, you know, it certainly gave us a lot of freedom with what happened to the characters and what has happened to them, what their backstories are, the real test was to make them live and breathe, figuratively speaking, make them rounded as far as possible, make people care about them and what happened to them. But it's interesting, going back to your Black Shadow theory or your theorising there, I think Nick and I both, being long-standing fans and having been on the other side and done fan fiction and speculated and all the rest of it, you know, never underestimate the power of, you know, what appears to be a throwaway reference or an aside or, you know, a background appearance, all this stuff. You know, we know, because we've been there, we know that it'll be pounced on and taken somewhere else, whether it's through fan fiction or otherwise, and even again in terms of sort of the work Thurman did in the UK comic, he would he would take a line or a reference perhaps to a city-state or something, or you know, a historical event, and you know, he'd flesh it out, and he'd run with it, and he'd make it something real and important. And so even if, you know, Black Shadow doesn't appear in records again, you know, he may well, down the line, appear in a different corner of the IDW universe. So, you know, it could be a springboard to much bigger things, you know.
Yeah, sort of the infamous Decepticons to Earth line from Transformers the movie.
Yes.
You know, which is the impetus for Target 2006.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I wish I'd thought of that as an example. That is the ultimate example, you know, Decepticons to Earth. Ah. Actually, we're talking about 1986, so you know,
yeah.
There you set in motion 200 issues of a story around that, you know.
Yeah.
And similarly, without, you know, issue two, I suppose, is intended to be an example of this, or a good example of this. We really believe in hinting at or being explicit about this massive weight of history behind these characters and behind the Cybertronians as a race, and you know. There must be so much unexplored territory there. And so if you get references, I mean, Rosa Storm's profile contains a number of references in the history to various massacres and various institutes and events. And just think, you know, you've got a cast, at the very least, you've got a cast of thousands, you know, at one point, no doubt, millions of people fighting for millions of years. And how much must have happened? And I think anything you can do which nods towards the larger canvas. And actually, not even just the larger canvas, but at the minutiae, you know, the details that make up these people's lives. And I suppose one of the themes of the book, in a sense, is that, okay, these could be background characters, they could be obscure characters, but they've had a life, they're having a life, things have happened to them to make them the people they are. You know, they're not the A-listers, they're not necessarily the high rankers, but they've lived through this war like everyone else has, and they've been affected by it in various ways. So it's about trying to, through the five issues, suggest lots have happened, and you know, that's why we find ourselves at this point.
We don't see that enough. That's something, Dave. You and I talk about that all the time. That there's not enough of that.
Yeah, and I mean, with Nick's artwork and then the dialogue you guys have put in, it is incredible how, you know, I knew Rotorstorm as a toy 3 months ago. And then, you know, a month ago I was introduced to Rotorstorm as a character. 2 months ago I loved him because he was completely and utterly sure of himself and things like that. And, you know, and then obviously in issue three when his brain ends up going backwards.
After he had some of the best lines ever.
Yeah, you right. you do honestly genuinely feel that emotion. I think that's a fantastic testament to it.
Well, I'm really, really pleased to hear that. And hopefully, I mean... as is the nature of these things, the stakes get higher as the series progresses. The chances of further deaths increase, and you know, hopefully you'll have those feelings again in connection with different people. Oh, sorry, people, can't say people. Different characters.
Well, like I say, there's
different
the
robots.
Well, like I say, there's the whole Guzzle Cup thing, which I'm sort of terrified
with.
Yeah. But then even just the ending of the ending of issue three with that.
Dental torture?
Yeah.
Dental torture?
Yeah, a bit of Marathon Man in there as well.
Yeah, it is definitely become a comic book which I can't, you know, stop gushing about and cannot recommend highly enough.
Very good to hear it.
Yeah.
So two issues to go. I've just, well, in the last week or so, seen the sort of finished product issue 5, you know, inked and coloured and the rest. Mm-hmm. And I know, and that was a very special feeling. I think Nick will agree. We do think issue 5. We've had a feeling that they improve as each issue improves on the last. And I'm personally extremely excited about issue 4. I think that's a game changer. I think there's stuff in there which hasn't been done before. We'll see what other people think. And issue 5, you know, it's the last issue. Everything has to come to a head. All the threads are tied up, pretty much. I think I've said, well, certainly the solicitation text says that there are long promised revelations. We haven't teased for the sake of it. There is payoff in issue 5, and I'm really excited about how people are going to take to it.
So obviously that means if there's going to be payoff and things like that, that means we get Mega and Giga in issue 5, yeah.
Mega and Bigger, did you say?
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. nothing could make that series better than a good round of Death Golf. I'm totally for that. So
my question is after the, I think, universal praise of Wreckers, is anyone, you heard, Dave, have you heard anyone say anything but, like, godly about this series?
Yes, and then they put him in a hole.
Yeah, we're going to get you if you're out there and you did. Anyway, after what I'm going to call the universal praise that this has received in the festival of awesome that it is, has IDW had the sense to, and I'm sure you couldn't give me any details, but at least inquire about future projects from you?
About what happens next? You're right. I can't say much. It's Nick and I hope that we'll be in another record situation at some point in the future, but we will see how things pan out. I'd love to think that whether it's a record sequel or whether it's something entirely different, whether it's something set in Cybertron's past or something maybe featuring the central cast or something like that. There's lots of mouth-watering possibilities, and Nick and I are both super keen. As you say, Wreckers has been well received, and that's really given us both a lot of confidence. And I tell you, there's just so many stories to be told, and there's so many directions that you could take things. And not every story has to be about the end of the universe. It doesn't always have to be for galactic stakes. I think. And I hope Wreckers bears this out. It can be the smaller moments of tension or loss or sacrifice or danger or dilemmas, whatever. Those can be just as powerful. Because another area where IDW has been canny, really. They haven't dropped Unicron into the mix in issue 2 of Simon didn't in issue 2 of Infiltration or whatever, so what Simon did fantastically well, I think, was have that slow build and put the pieces together gradually. Anyway, to return to my central point, I think there's lots of little corners of the Transformers universe that are worthy of further exploration, and it's a very broad canvas, so hopefully Nick and I will be able to add more colors to that in due course. We will see.
Okay. Well, I think I speak for Dave and myself when I say that you probably think you and Nick should just write everything in the Transformers from now on. But I think we're coming to the end here, Dave, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I just so long as I've got Mega and Giga out there, and they're obviously aware of the fact that they'd be in the series.
Perhaps we can hit you up for a follow-up when after Wreckers is over, so we can have a spoilerific conversation about it.
Let's do that. Absolutely. Yeah, there's lots more to come. So let's have that conversation.
We can't wait.
Well, James, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today.
No, well, thanks for the opportunity to spout for a long time, so I apologize to you and your listeners.
Sorry, we do that every episode. So don't worry about that. Like I say, thank you very, very much, and be sure, obviously, to check out Wreckers 4 and 5 as they come out, and if you haven't been reading 1, 2, and 3, you can get them now.
Shame on you.
Yeah, and get them now. Okay, well, thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was absolutely brilliant. Obviously, we want to thank James for his time. And, dude, I'm really excited for Wreckers number 4.
What, you weren't before?
Oh, well, no, I was. But, like, you know, now once you get the chance to start talking to the people who were behind it.
Wasn't it refreshing to talk to somebody who really knows their Transformers? I mean, besides, like, you and me and Andy.
It's always
or someone
great.
Else we podcast with. I don't want to besmirch my fellow RFCers. We know our shit, too.
I always find whenever you converse with somebody who knows what they're doing and can sort of... I don't mean it to sound like an egotistical thing, but you sometimes get casual fans and things like that. But it's always nice when you can speak to somebody who you can converse with on the same level.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's not necessarily knowledge per se, but passion as well is always the great thing. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's... really, really fantastic, and really, really thanks to James again, and thanks to you for setting this up.
Oh, my pleasure.
So
you can really tell where that quality comes from when you talk to the guy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I felt that the same about the conversation, and I imagine you did too, the breakfast I had with Nick Roche at BotCon, just like talking to somebody who's like, wow, you know your Transformers. Like, no wonder your stuff's so good. What a surprise. You know, I felt the same about this conversation.
Yeah. Shall we return everybody to their regular viewing material?
Yes, yes. You can return to your lives now that we've...
Or is it audio, I suppose?
To them.
your regular hosts, whoever they may be.
Yeah, whoever they may be. You could be anywhere right now. We're in audio limbo.
Okay, the topic this week, characters you want to see return in different continuities. Now, this is a very open question. I mean, Transformers, they have characters that return all the time that aren't exactly they're new iterations of that character not returning. So, do you have characters that you would actually like to see return, like a previous version or an existing character who you'd like to see a new iteration of in, you know, another form? So, what do you think?
I always wanted Armada in, animated Inferno.
Like a version of Inferno, just Inferno.
Oh, like Inferno, like from Beast Wars.
Oh,
like
that would be so awesome.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be?
I would love to have like crazy pissed off, like Psycho Inferno from, was it from Autobop? What was the episode when he went crazy? I would love to have that. But yeah, Beast Wars Inferno is one of my all-time favorite characters.
They have G1 Inferno in animated, but he dies all the time. But still, like Starscream, just getting back up. Like later in another scene, he's just mysteriously back in the scene.
Episode recurring Kenny or something. That just
in episode, and no one even draws the fact that, dude, you just died horrifically last issue. I mean, scene. Huh? Oh, yeah.
God, they killed Inferno. You bastards.
Animated Doofy says animated Wheeljack. That is such a great idea.
Yeah.
Yes.
And XV, of course, said Skybite, and I love Skybite.
Yeah.
Six Shot. Six Shot looks like a good suggestion. We had the toy return. Did Six Shot actually show up in, what was it, Energon? Or...
He was in the background, wasn't he?
He was recolor in Energon.
But did he show up as a character? I know he had the toy.
I think he was there, yeah. In some scene.
Yeah, so I actually never watched like every episode of Energon. I don't know that I watched more than two episodes of Cybertron. I suck. Metroplex would be great. I love Metroplex. Especially, you know, like Metroplex.
DevCon. Speaking of DevCon, but dude, I don't know. DevCon's kind of got a weird... it's like everybody's memory of what DevCon is like a Boba Fett. But
It's a misremembrance
because in the episode he's kind of like, "Hey guys, how's it going?
I'm DevCon.
Let's go fishing." You know, it's like the character, yes. But you know, you're awesome too.
I'm sitting on ATC, like raving about it. I'm like, did we watch this? Is there a missing one? Did I miss an episode?
No,
really? I might have.
It's just the one where he's kind of cool, and then he takes the kid on, and he's like, "Hey, we're gonna go have an adventure."
It's adventure time. He's Captain Canuck. Yeah. Space.
But everybody remembers him, like Boba Fett or something. You know, they hear Bounty Hunter and they, I don't know. But so I don't know. Maybe it would be cool to have like that DevCon show up later and bastardize it for everybody. So you have like regular DevCon show up and like animated, and he's like, "Hey, everybody, I got a great idea. Let's go to the disco."
That would be great. Shattered Glass had Shattered Glass DevCon, and he was like, just like the original show version, for the fact that everyone remembers him as some Boba Fett character, and he's not.
Yes. It's way cooler than he is.
Yes. Hey, it's... Whoa, dude, DevCon. Serious business is fixing to happen. Like what? Who wants to go play Scratch Off Lotto, guys? I'm a dangerous man. Dangerous man.
That's right. I thought you were taller and cooler.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
I love the fact that Armada Polisher is getting put into G1 because the fact people from Armada or RID or whatever are getting worked into G1, it's like, wow, actually, it's like when RVD went to WWE and then TNA and stuff like that. It's like, wow, they're making the big time now.
Nope. Guess again.
Yet.
Yes. You know, he's been done a million times, but since Derek White mentioned Animated Devastator, I really want to at least see what he would have looked like.
Yes.
Yeah. As he mentioned in an interview. You know, that's one of the things he may have wanted to do with a little bit more time, finish Devastator and Animated Devastator.
Just not with Dirt Boss.
You know, come on.
Oh, still so, yeah. What Devastator would have been was be the corporate head of the construction committee, like the guy in a suit who shows up like once a month to make sure permits are
points
good,
right, guys?
He's like got a cup of coffee and a donut. Like, yeah. That's Devastator. He's the head of the construction crew. All right, I'm going back to headquarters. Try not to mess this thing up, guys. A lot of riding on this thing.
He just says things. He just points and says, like, deadline and stuff, and then...
Yeah. He taps at his watch at the guys on break, like, hey, buddy. Hey.
Hey. I would appreciate it if you would go ahead and go back to work.
Yeah. God. Make me pull in some day laborer, guys. You keep pissing me off, Dirt Boss.
Bring in the Mexicans.
We can go downtown. There's no problem. We got a van. We can go pick up some people. It's no problem.
And Dirt Boss will be following them around with the box of Dunkin' Donuts. No, that's okay, boss. We're on job. I got this point. I got this shit, man. We're good. Mixmaster, what do you think? Huh? Well, he's fired.
So the character I wanted to see come back did actually come back. It was Galvatron. The G1 Galvatron actually came back. Not in like the best way possible, but he came back in the Armada comic. I think it was like issue 9, shortly after Furman picked it up from Chris Arancini at Dreamwave. You know, but you know, that was the when Worlds Collide. Was that the name of the story?
Yeah, Worlds Collide.
Yeah, was that with all the like the weird like transmetal horsemen and whatever all that was?
No, that was
Something
Energon.
Different?
Yeah, that was Energon.
That was something else. Okay. Yeah.
That was Galvatron.
Well, we're just pulling like names out of the Dreamwave chat, aren't we?
That's how memorable it was.
They'll let you know the quality of work that was coming out at the time.
Basically, Galvatron's version of the NWO comes walking out to fight the Armada-verse. And, like, Megatron just lays it down on him. Which is kind of
Well, I mean, you can easily make the argument that Galvatron is the most absurdly overpowered Transformer ever. I mean, he destroyed what was it? Was it Jupiter? He destroyed
everything.
He destroyed a gas giant. Now he didn't destroy Char, did he? I don't think he destroyed Char. I think he destroyed a gas giant.
He still had to go home.
Yeah. So that goes back to I guess it was Five Faces of Darkness. He was just absurdly powerful. And absurdly crazy.
Him and Drift.
Yes. Yeah. There needs to be an IDW Galvatron comic. That would be great.
Yeah, but Galvatron didn't smile like, oh, it's a bad guy. Smile. Kill him. Smile. I'm good.
You know, Galvatron and Cyclonus, I remember reading it was a magazine or something a review that said that that the devil in Saddam Hussein had one of the most fleshed out, realistic, you know, like loving gay relationships in any medium ever. Well, Galvatron and Cyclonus had one of the worst, most abusive, you know, gay relationships in any media ever.
There was no worse than what he had going with Soundwave and with Shockwave is Megatron.
Yeah. I mean, with Megatron, at least, you know, he gave them the hope that, you know, they may eventually, you know, like, achieve something. Galvatron just beat Cyclonus up like, you know, he owned him.
I just felt like that whole series was Cyclonus looking across the battlefield at Ultra Magnus, and they're kind of mouthing to each other, like, can you believe this asshole? And pointing at their leader and being like, oh, yeah, look at the dickhead I'm stuck with.
<You know? laughs> Oh, man.
The great thing about Galvatron is, though, as everything goes about him, what Megatron, what are we going to do today? Megatron's like, we're going to steal energy from trees. Okay. Galvatron, what are we going to do? We're going to steal energy from trees! Wah! I don't know why, but I like his idea. He's got energy.
Of course, then Then Galvatron, at the end, by the return of Optimus Prime, you know, he was, like, completely coherent and kind of ruined it for me.
Yeah. The best Galvatron was the kind of one that you would imagine, like, sitting in front of a television, naked, covered in peanut butter, watching
Captain Elvis.
Kangaroo, you know?
Hey, man, Prime showed back up. He had to start paying attention again.
Yeah.
The best analogy is Megatron is like Depeche Mode. Galvatron is Psalm 69 era ministry.
I just went totally over my head, Rob.
Wow. Okay, I'm sorry.
That was so deep.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Someone out there is like, dude, I get that.
Now they're going to be writing your name on their knuckles.
But not us.
I'm not high enough right now to really understand what you said.
Okay, Megatron's like, all right, we've got to steal energy. How are we going to get it? From trees. Okay, that was Megatron. Here's Galvatron. Okay, I'm going to move the mic away from me so I don't blast out.
We're still in Virginia! Shoot that motherfucker! Let's go! We're on a storm break!
I got dizzy doing that.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty good, Rob.
Galvatron.
Thanks, Rob.
Okay, so anybody else have any...
That hurt.
You know, the thing is, it's like doing this, we get used to a certain pattern. We get used to XV here being kind of like...
Our foil.
Our foil, yeah. He's like, you know...
He keeps us on point while...
I mean, like, that in a good way.
Bad yeah.
Jokes. Oh, so, DevCon. Now, let me pull the mic away from my head again.
Kim's passing me a tweet.
Yes, thank you. Okay, nice, we're done.
So we just got word that our very own Recharge, a.k.a. Gabe Owens, his son's show, Logan Owens, just walked. So that's pretty awesome.
Awesome. Nice. Yay. Congratulations.
Show Logan Metallica's
it is,
album.
All things are possible now.
Yeah, all things are possible. So,
what?
Don't worry about it, Andrew. He used to be on RFC, and he's on one of our other podcasts right now. So, not the
real
guy.
Trendy podcast,
the MMA wrestling podcast. So.
Yeah, the cool one.
The podcast
that makes fun and beats up the other podcast.
Yeah, oh, one with tribal tattoos and a 5 o'clock beard.
Yeah, that's cool. Is it?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
The sweaty one that you know
all day.
Yeah. So, any other characters, or are we going to put a lid on this one?
That's good stuff.
The other thing, I always want more some more Dead End.
You know, I love Alternator's Dead End. It's like the most gorgeous Transformer ever made.
Yes. You are correct there.
Just the terrible sarcasm. And there's so much to make fun of in the Transformers, and it very rarely gets a straight man. And Dead End was the very rare Transformers straight man.
Yes.
Speaking, of course, in a comedy sense.
Yes, 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 yes.
Him and Breakdown were really good together.
Big gay Transformers.
Yeah.
Dead End and Breakdown should have gone on, like, the road together.
Are there
like,
any, are there any, like,
so
real
to speak.
Transformers
so to speak.
That we can
Thank
actually
you.
Say are gay? The conversation's already broken down. We might as well break it down a little
bit. Right, we might as well go there. I don't know. I mean,
everyone jokes Tracks, but I don't really think it's Tracks. I really do
think Tracks. I think Perceptor, maybe.
I really do think it's Galvatron and Cyclonus. I really do.
I don't.
Over Megatron and Starscream?
Galvatron's not really
Slash that were written for those characters.
What about Shockwave?
I'd say, like, Blitzwing and Astrotrain, maybe.
Astrotrain had more of a maniacal relationship with everyone because he's like, hey, we got to lighten the burden in outer space.
How far is Astrotrain from Astroglide, you know?
Ew.
Glide. Wow. Wow. We went there.
XV, we miss you.
Yeah.
God, where's XV when we need him to save us? Brian, save us. All right, let's get us out of here.
The host brought us to this topic. I claim no responsibility.
I was just curious. You know, it was just a one-time thing. I didn't know. So,
yeah. How curious you feeling?
That's right, XV. XV is saying that we're doing this intentionally so that we prove that he can never not be on this show.
That's true.
And that is true.
Yeah, that's true. So, Mike is saying...
Red Alert, Inferno, Hoist, and Grapple are also candidates.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
They are.
Just
candidates.
That was my...
Red Alert is... I don't know.
Red Alert's getting close to Galvatron territory, where he's not really after anything more than eating graham crackers and farting in the fish tank. That's all he really wants to do all day. And he's just like, okay, you're all out to get me.
It's really hard to.
We will upper deck the Autobots toilets.
I just want to say this. It's impossible to ascribe sexuality to completely asexual beings, but you know, we're just trying to have fun. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's always said Trax was gay, and the accent doesn't help. But Michael McConaughey himself said, "No, Trax is not gay, but Rodimus Prime is." With Dick Gaudier sitting right next to him.
I don't know. Rodimus is the only transformer that I know of for sure that got laid. Ever.
Yeah, he did. Actually, that is true.
It was Daniel, though.
Yeah.
No.
We don't know if it was like a good lay.
He might not have been. He might have been uncomfortable through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little kiss territory here, guys.
That's true. So let's go ahead and end it.
That's been kind of creepy.
Let's end on a high note. Oh. Damn.
We're taking the show where it should never, ever, ever go again. So, this has been Radio Free Cybertron. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week. Check us out, tfradio.net.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, we're sorry.
Sorry for this episode.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron with your hosts, Brian Kilby, J.D. Church, Ender, Rob Springer, John DeLuna, and XV. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.